From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Wait a minute. We've already spent the money. In other words, the process is kind of bass-ackwards here.
The next governor, whoever that may be, has got a real fiscal cliff to deal with. But this budget gets us through the next year without the devastating cuts that people were against and without the tax extension that people were against. Let's pass a responsible budget, the most responsible budget we can pass in this climate, given the fact that everybody's against everything.
If I look down the road at this juncture, as we're doing this right now, that is not a pretty picture for FY16. And for us to be only doing roads and bridges, not considering transit, not considering the full transportation needs of this state, I think this is the wrong time to do this, and I think this is the wrong approach.
All of this stuff is, all this year, is nothing less than the desperation that your side of the aisle has, because people in this state might actually pay attention this year and fire some of you people for the despicable record that you have and for the fact that you've driven a once great state into the ground with your failed liberal policies.
Those are some of the voices from the final days of the spring legislative session. And what happens at this time of year? The volume gets a little louder on some of those voices. Talk of taxes put off until after the election. We'll discuss what to make of the budget getting approval at the Capitol. And we'll delve into some political intrigue regarding the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, WUIS Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, our guest, Carrie Lester of the Associated Press, and Dave McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. Guys, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
And this time of year, I should also note that we tape this show midday on a Friday. The legislature is scheduled to adjourn on Saturday, so there could be events that will take place after we record this show, but we are going with the knowledge we have as of the noon hour on Friday. And first, a budget was approved. It was not the budget with the big tax increase, nor was it a budget that was the draconian budget that we heard so much about. People like to use the word doomsday. It was something in between, but it's funded without taxes, and I will let one of you folks start the explanation.
Well, I keep referring to it as sort of a plan C. You know, there was an original plan to pass a budget that was contingent on the extension of the state's temporary income tax. House Speaker Michael Madigan had some trouble getting the requisite 60 votes in his House. So last week they made an attempt at a doomsday budget, which went down in flames during a vote on the House floor. I think there were 5 yes votes for this plan. So this plan C kind of cobbles together a budget, but it does so with a number of gimmicky methods, interfund borrowing being one of them. And that's been something I've been looking into over the past few days. There are about 650 different funds that have reserves, and former Governor Rod Blagojevich had made a habit out of sweeping some of these funds, and Governor Quinn now wants to go into these funds but pay them back within a certain amount of time, about a 2-year period. And that will apparently get us to January when they could vote on extension of the tax increase, or it, with the possibility of an election of a Republican governor, leave a pretty difficult financial situation in his hands.
And I presume that is one of the things we're kind of waiting on. If a Democrat wins in November, they come back and approve a tax increase with this. And as you mentioned, it may very well not happen if Bruce Rauner wins.
I sat down with Senate President John Cullerton this week, and he was pretty confident that they would vote on a tax increase come January. House Speaker Michael Madigan hedged it a little bit more, said he would be doing some work throughout the summer, and then after the election, he'd assess what needed to be done. But it's certainly on the table.
Now, you mentioned the return to Blagojevich-style budgeting. Is that what we're seeing, Charlie Wheeler?
In a sense, it is. Kerry mentioned the fact that we're going to be borrowing money from special funds. The difference was that when Blagojevich did this, he and his budget director, John Filan, the process that they used was something that had not been done before. Governors, going back, in my recollection, at least to Jim Thompson's time, had relied on surplus money in some of the 650 funds that Kerry mentioned. And the legislature would pass a bill saying, you can take so much money from this fund, so much money from that fund, so much money from the other fund. And this was approved. It was a bipartisan effort, and it was a way to shore up finances. Blagojevich came in and won the right for his budget director to unilaterally take whatever amount of money he wanted from whatever fund he chose. They had that for a year or so, and then that authority was revoked. The interfund borrowing that's been done in recent years, and it's become pretty common, has always involved borrowing the money and then paying it back with interest, and that's what's being planned for this year, borrowing something like $650 million from dozens of these special funds, and then repaying the money over time with interest. One of the things that was interesting about Blagojevich, which again is not happening now, Blagojevich and his administration jacked up the fees for a wide range of services. And these fees are what feed a lot of these special funds. And they did it exactly to provide additional money that they could then sweep. In theory, the fees are supposed to cover the cost of providing whatever service is involved. Regulating doctors, they pay a fee for their license. It goes to their regulation. Somebody wants to do some kind of project involving environmental concerns, they have to get a permit from the EPA. That money is supposed to go into a fund to oversee this kind of regulatory operation. And in Blagojevich's cases, they just jacked the fees dramatically, so there was excess money in those funds. It was challenged in court. Ultimately, those fee increases stood, and it provided a source of revenue for the Blagojevich administration. That is different than what Quinn is proposing and what the Democrats in the House are basing their budget on, and I assume the Senate, when all is said and done, will go along with it. They're saying, well, there's excess money in the funds now, and we are taking specific amounts from these funds and using them to prop up basically the operations of state government.
And thanks to Rod Blagojevich for raising the fees.
Yeah.
Dave McKinney, one thing we've heard in this budget discussion, people saying, well, there could be prisons that will close, there'll be social services that won't be provided. Is that a reality right now?
I don't think it's a reality right now. I don't think going into the – certainly not before November, because that's not going to be something that the Quinn administration wants to present to voters. You know, I think that we very well could see that kind of thing happening if Rauner wins and if the tax extension doesn't go through in January. But for now, this is a maintenance budget, and I don't think some of the practices they're doing here – are as reckless as what we've seen in the past. Certainly they're not skipping a pension payment as we've seen happen under Blagojevich and other administrations.
And as New Jersey is doing this year, the Governor Chris Christie out there wants to do that this
sure.
year.
Sure. I mean, that's it. We're also not seeing, as we did, I think, in 2010, you know, and in other years where there's just like the General Assembly gives the governor a pot of money, you know, a lump sum appropriation, and basically says, you know, spend it however you want. And of course, that's what led to the whole Neighborhood Recovery Initiative situation in that year. So, I mean, I think from the standpoint, it could be a lot worse than what we saw here. But, you know, for the governor, I mean, it's interesting, you know, when we all heard his budget address earlier this spring, I mean, we had some pretty lofty and ambitious ideas, and those are all pretty much on the cutting room floor here. I mean, from, you know, as we mentioned, the tax extension, the idea that both he and Speaker Madigan cooked up to give homeowners a property tax rebate. That's on the cutting room floor. So,
millionaires tax that the speaker talked about. Quinn wanted to, you know, even as you go beyond budgeting, raising the minimum wage, doubling the earned income tax credit. There is a long list of progressive ideas that have been unveiled this spring that have either been watered down to the point where they're just going to be advisory questions on the ballot in November, or they've just been, you know, dropped altogether.
Well, in the case, particularly for the ones that involve money, like the sending out the $500 checks purportedly for property tax relief, those were all contingent upon the income tax rates remaining where they are today and not dropping January 1st. When the rates drop, there's going to be a revenue fall off of close to $2 billion. And without that money, you can't do some of this goody-goody stuff that that Quinn talked about in his State of the State and budget address.
And we also had a billion-dollar plan approved in the House so far, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, for a road and bridge building program, Brian.
Yeah, that's $1 billion for roads and bridges, and I think there's $100 million that's also going to local construction projects. But this is all, they're very careful to say that this is only, I guess the term of art is horizontal construction. So bridges, roads that go horizontally, it's not vertical where you'd have buildings. And that's where you've often gotten into trouble in the past where, you know, lawmakers would earmark for some kind of statue or museum in their district, these little pet pork projects. People are being very careful to say that's not in there. Of course, we actually didn't get to see with a list of projects before the House had to vote on it yesterday, which was kind of a point of contention. And yet it still passed pretty overwhelmingly with both Republicans and Democrats voting for it.
And how are we going to go ahead?
Oh, no, it was, I mean, despite the 97-11 vote in favor of this, there was a pretty contentious and lengthy debate on the House floor. And you did have a lot of a number of state reps from both sides of the aisle saying, you know, we are in dire financial condition here, and how can we be, you know, responsibly spending another billion without knowing the details of this? So well, I thought it went on for quite a while.
And to your, I think, Bill, your next question was going to be, how are we going to pay for this? And maybe Charlie can correct me if I'm wrong here. But as I understand it from talking to the IDOT secretary yesterday, when Illinois First was passed in the late 90s, which was a big one-time capital construction program.
George Ryan's
then,
program.
Under
yeah.
George Ryan, yep. And they raised the license plate fees. There were other fees and taxes that were imposed. And that money was dedicated to paying back the bonds from Illinois First. And as it's explained to us, is that these bonds are beginning to be paid off and this revenue is still coming in. So they're going to dedicate that revenue to pay for this smaller road and bridge repair construction program. But then you had people like Representative Elaine Nekritz. We heard from her at the top of the show today stand up and say, you know, we already have a huge budget hole we're looking at for possibly later this fiscal year, definitely for the next budget year. Why are we obligating this potential money that we may need for just basic government services? We're obligating it for this construction program. Now, she and others say that's not the responsible thing to do.
Sort of look fondly back on the Illinois First thing here. I remember before that, that registration fee, I think, was $48, you know? And you look back on it, and what a bargain that was. I mean, I think it's up to $101 now for a car. So, anyway, piece of trivia there.
Well, but on the other hand, and you know, to be a tax and spender, people don't like driving on highways that are turning to oatmeal and streets with potholes big enough to lose an elephant in.
This morning I'm seeing on Twitter that there's a Chicago aldermanic candidate who is, like, leading her own pothole repair crew in the ward. So this is definitely a big political issue in certain parts of the state. And people do point out we had a very challenging winter here. The trucks were out quite a bit tearing up the roads. Anyone who's driven on a road in Illinois will know that the roads are pretty beat up. And so, you know, the counterargument is they say there really is a need for this construction program. On the other hand, I'm running out of hands to go on the other of here, but on the other hand, this was said to be something that Governor Quinn really wanted. And, you know, what politician doesn't like to have plenty of new, you know, $1 billion worth of new ribbons to cut in an election year?
And on yet another hand, looking at it from a public policy perspective, the money that's raised by the license plate fees and by driver's licenses historically has been intended for transportation purposes. And there's always been a huge opposition block to the notion of using those kinds of road-related fees for other spending to help pay for health care, for example, or the salaries of people who work for the Department of Revenue, that kind of thing.
This is State Week in Review. Coming up, a political dust-up involving the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, the Chicago Sun-Times' Dave McKinney, and Carrie Lester of the Associated Press. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. In its short life, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library has had a few controversies. Now it has another in the final week of the legislative session. House Speaker Michael Madigan suggested perhaps that it should be independent from the Historic Preservation Agency. And that created a little bit of a political firestorm. And Dave McKinney, you followed some of that and found some interesting things.
Well, I mean, it was interesting. This amendment to a bill got dropped on Friday afternoon leading into the Memorial Day weekend. So there was very little, very little attention surrounding when that happened. And as we all kind of dove into it and started looking at it, you know, this was an effort by Madigan basically to shift control of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum from the State Historic Preservation Agency, which has been kind of the umbrella for the museum since it opened in 2005, to an autonomous state agency. And the resources, would shift over there. Madigan justified the move, saying that, you know, there were a lot of unfilled positions at the library and museum, and that the museum needed to be able to chart its own destiny. And what we saw as the week progressed, I mean, this of course passed the House, and it's now awaiting action in the Senate, and I'm being told that it may stall there this spring. It encountered opposition from the State Historic Preservation Agency board. They felt like they were blindsided by Madigan's move. Madigan, acknowledged that he is friends with the director of the museum, Elaine Makovic, who is also longtime friends with a guy who happens to be Mike Madigan's district office landlord. And so there was this perception, I think, early on, or at least a question early on, about whether Madigan was doing some sort of favor for, his landlord and the landlord's friend. There's been, no real evidence that necessarily was the case, but I think
Dave,
an interesting storyline.
Yeah, I mean, you get to a great point, Dave, which is that why people just see this and they think, what is the speaker doing worrying about a museum downstate? Like, this is, everybody is like, that's why you're looking at the landlord relationship. People are wondering what is going on here? There must be some backstory. Why would the speaker kind of try and push this through, files it on a Friday afternoon and wants to push it through on a holiday and right at the end of session? If this is something that's truly good public policy, why not do it earlier? And people are just trying to figure out what is the angle here.
Well, there's a delicious irony here too. I mean, on the floor, Madigan is saying that, again, as I mentioned, that part of the problem over at the library and museum is they have all these unfilled positions. And then, all you have to do is harken back a few months, and Madigan was at the center of the whole hiring scandal at Metra and a target in the report from the Governor's Reform Commission and talking about how he controlled dozens and dozens, hundreds of jobs or whatever at Metra over the years. And so he just seemed like it was a very kind of odd conduit. And again, in fairness, I mean, I think you can look at that library and museum and it's still a vibrant place. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people come every year. They've had 3 million visitors since 2005. But yet, you go to places in there and you still see, like, the tube television screen with Tim Russert, reporting on the 1860 election. I mean, Tim Russert's been dead for, 6 years now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are updates that certainly need to happen over there.
And Lincoln's been dead longer than that.
But Lincoln's been dead longer than that. But I think there was also, an issue that didn't get a lot of attention here. But I think there's been kind of a long-running clash between Makovic, who runs the museum, and the director of the State Historic Preservation Agency, Amy Martin. I mean, there's been a just sort of a clash in terms of vision, I think, and that might be partly what's fueling this too.
And I would say that
wasn't there a University of Illinois professor who's was one of the prime movers behind this legislation?
That's what we've been told. He testified at the committee on Monday. He is chairman of this advisory board, and there are not a lot of people questioning the credentials of the advisory board members that I've seen. There are strict requirements in the law about you have to have so-and-so, you know, contributions in history or library science or something like that. They're not supposed to be, some alderman's cousin or something like that getting on the Abraham Lincoln Advisory Board. But you're right, Charlie. His complaint is that we're just advisory and no one is taking our advice. And I think that they want to have a little more say in how it's done. He also points out that, 17 unfilled positions in the library or something like that? And so they're saying that, the Historic Preservation Agency is just dragging their feet on, filling these positions that should be filled at a world-class library and museum.
Dave, you mentioned the maybe the internal politics of managing the museum leading to this. Don't you see it might not have been the speaker's intent to get this put into law, but to send a message that I could change the law to smooth the path a little bit more for a certain element in that political battle internally?
Oh, I think it could definitely be perceived as a shot across the bow. And I think, if you're the director of the Historic Preservation Agency, that's how I would interpret it if I were them. But, I think more than anything else, what it does is open up a conversation that probably is going to last now for several months, maybe into the new year, about the direction of this place. Because, you look at it, and while there have been enormous successes with it, it's a very popular destination. There have been some issues with the place too. The idea of at one point one of their executive director had a shoplifting issue that was an embarrassment. This issue that I've written some stories about involving the provenance of the Lincoln hat. I think that's a legitimate question. They've had these kinds of issues that come up over time. But one of the things Madigan was saying at some point was that maybe the National Archives ought to step in and run this place, and as they do other presidential libraries. And I think an idea like that actually would have traction if the feds could be convinced to do it. You look at the Lincoln home here in Springfield, that's run by the National Park Service. It used to be owned by the state of Illinois, and the state turned it over to the feds. Here, I think it might not be a bad idea to do, because you would get a sense that there might be a better financial underpinning if the feds were running it as opposed to the state. And Senator Durbin was over at the Capitol here on Friday morning, and we asked him the question about what he thought ought to happen, and Durbin was just all he just said, look, I don't care who runs it, it just needs to be run professionally. So I don't know. I think we've got a conversation on our hands here that's going to spread into the new year.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Sure. Thank you. I was just going to point out. I keep thinking that this may be part of a larger storyline of the tension between Governor Quinn and House Speaker Madigan. We all know what a big fan of Lincoln that Quinn is, and to wrest control or oversight of this agency from him, I think to some extent is another example of how irritated Madigan may or may not have been with Quinn over over this flap with the RTA and a report that was released that indicated that he was tied to these patronage requests. It just has me wondering between that and the very sudden shift in the loss of numbers and the tax increase vote, whether Madigan is really wanting to do the governor any favors at this point.
And related, if we work under the assumption that this was a send a message bill, and that happens in the legislature, there may have been another send a message bill as well this week regarding fracking, where they were possibly going to take away control from the state to set regulations and speed the process up to get hydraulic fracturing moving in the state. And I'll let anybody field that comment down there.
Sure. Well, this this dropped late on a Friday. I think it kept me in the newsroom until 9 p.m. or so. And Representative John Bradley, who's a Marion Democrat who filed the bill, was not answering his phone. So I was calling all of these environmental and legal analysts to help me dissect this bill. But what this would do would change the rulemaking process and basically give the legislature the control to establish rules for hydraulic fracturing instead of the Department of Natural Resources. And the Department of Natural Resources had been, you know, taking its time, going through over 30,000 different pieces of input as to how we should begin this somewhat controversial process. And it just... More than anything, it was acknowledged, I think, less than 3 days after the bill was filed that it was dead in the House. But it came across as a warning shot from Bradley, from other Southern Illinois representatives from both sides of the aisle, that they feel that this rulemaking process is taking far too long, and they want to get started with drilling in impoverished areas of Southern Illinois.
And one of the things, if I can just quickly add, is that the DNR says they have these 35,000 public comments that were made on these rules. And we have seen that apparently some environmental activist groups had a plan to kind of deluge the office with comments on these things. And they say it's just taking a lot of time to properly, you know, respond to all these comments. Meanwhile, we saw anti-fracking activists, I think, delivering a coffin to Representative Bradley's office this week and holding a mock. It's not clear to me if they think they can actually change anyone's mind. They're still hoping that Illinois would do a moratorium. But, I mean, with both environmental groups and industry favoring the fracking, agreement in legislative form that was agreed last year, that seems like a long shot at this point.
In our remaining time, we'll get in some notes from the field. We'll start with Dave McKinney.
Well, this past week marked the beginning, long-awaited beginning, of Representative Derek Smith's corruption trial. And there was a line that came out in the opening statements from prosecutors that quoted Smith on a tape from an undercover informant talking about a bribe. And he's like, "Bring me the cheddar."
So we're dealing with who moves somebody's cheese, I guess.
I think he would have gone for a more expensive type of cheese, maybe.
With Brian Mackey.
I just want to mention that we have heard almost nothing from gubernatorial candidate Bruce Rauner this week. And it kind of makes me wonder, well, he's been getting a lot of tough questions lately about where is your budget plan if you're really so against the tax extension, if you think you can manage it, come up with a plan. He got a really contentious Q&A last week. Tribune had a nice they published it online. You can read it if you want. But he has been very quiet, and it kind of makes me wonder if we're going to get a deluge once all the dust settles here in Springfield, if he's just going to go on the offensive or what.
And Carrie Lester.
It was a heartbreaking story that came across last weekend that State Representative Jihan Gordon Booth's stepson had been shot and killed on his front porch in Peoria. So I thought it was just a very heartening gesture to see members of the Black Caucus charter a bus to Peoria yesterday to spend some time with her and her family. Services are on Saturday. They thought, well, there's a potential we could still be in session, and so they made the extra effort to be with their colleague.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Dave McKinney and Carrie Lester for joining us today. We'll be back next week where we can tell you what actually happened in the waning hours of the session. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using your desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.